You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It'll be kind of like being a pilot. You'll come out of college and you want a cyber guarantee. And we'll give you a cyber guarantee.
Great.
And then if you make it through the school, then you'll get qualified and that's what you'll go do. If you don't, then we'll
room in the grunt.
Make you an infantry officer.
Worked okay for you and
worked
me,
out for
so.
You. Of course, everyone knows that the most intelligent, handsome people on the earth are infantry officers.
As this would convey.
Exhibit A and B.
That's right.
Everybody knows that.
Booker T with the MC!
What are you screaming about, man? What is up? What's going on? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy birthday, All Marine Radio.
Yeah, how about that? You're number three.
Yeah, that's so great, Mac. Boy, and look what you've done with it. All by your lonesome, man. You're kicking ass and taking names.
talking to myself every day.
Yeah, that's great.
The Kim and I have been doing this since about 2000. in between my deployments and other stuff, and we've been doing this. I replaced a big time radio presence in where I live, where Kim lives now, in Grand Forks, North Dakota. He was a big deal, and I was like, oh geez, do you think Matt is going to be up to it? And I'd never even done radio before. And I'd helped out a little bit, and then he got a job someplace else. I was gonna do this show, and then he got a job someplace else, and they said, "Hey, man, you're the man." I was like, "Uh oh. I wonder how this is gonna go." But it was awesome being part of a community and being the host.
Being the host of a
moderator of a debate forum, and you try to make it respectful every day. And you try to give the people that you, even the ones you disagree with, you try to give them a forum. Was a lot of fun.
And you did. I tell you, you crushed it. And just like you're crushing this, but yeah, you took control of the airways, folks. he was the most listened to radio host. In the area for 10 years, or however long you did that. I think 10 years.
Yeah, for 10 years.
And you absolutely crushed it.
Well, you know what I learned, you know, because I'm not a conservative blowtorch, you know. I have conservative point of views, but I'm not a blowtorch, and I'm not. And what I hate about the media, whether from you're for the left or for the right, is that it seems like you take your talking points and you go on and you light up the blowtorch, and that's what you do. You do the talking points. And, you know, God gave me a brain, and I know bullshit when I hear it. And both sides spew it. And so to me, and people appreciated that they appreciate that there's something devoted to the truth. And in my mind, I had, you know, things like the McNeil Lear News Hour, which is smart people getting asked hard questions and not just the bullshit boilerplate that tends to take up so much of our media's time. I had a senator from North Dakota on who is a numbers guy. And I remember him coming on and and I have a degree in economics, okay? And I got B's and C's mostly in economics, but I mean, I paid attention. And I tried on occasion. And so I asked him, I said, "Hey, Senator, explain to me how it works. This glut of the baby boom generation is coming to retirement, which will stress Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. Who's paying for that?" And then he gave me this, you know, bullshit answer. And he says, "Does that answer the question?" I said, "No, let me ask it again. Who's paying for this?" And he kind of chuckled. And he said, "Okay, Mac, you're obviously paying attention." And I said, "Yeah, I am. Can you footnote the math for me to tell me how it's going to work?" And what he essentially told me was, Either the economy has to perform better to throw off more money that we don't raid out of the Social Security Trust Fund, which would be a watershed event, or we have to raise taxes. I said, well, why doesn't anybody say that? And he says, hello, because it's not what anybody wants to hear. And so I'm partial to the truth. And so, anyway, my curse. But
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. No. I'm just saying that when you were here, the airwaves were pure. And you took on both sides, and then you expressed your opinion, and you let the chips fall. But
I had fun doing it. And there's no reason.
We had a blast.
At the end of the day, I mean, it's designed to be entertaining, so it should be fun, and your sense of humor should be a big part of it. And because people don't have to listen. They listen because they want to. They listen because they learn something. They're moderately entertained. And but again, it should be about the truth. And too often it's not. Too often it's about bullshit. So anyway,
A little side story. I call Marcus from Stimati to get my carpets clean.
Okay.
I haven't talked to him in a year.
No.
And the first thing out of his mouth when he called me back was, where's Max? How's he doing? I said, he's still doing All Marine Radio. He said, oh, my God. I forgot. I haven't been listening. He said, don't tell him I'm not listening. Of course I'm going to tell you.
Exactly.
But he's a good guy. But anyway, I still get asked by when I walk around or drive around town, how's Mac? Where's he doing? What's he doing? Mm. And just like that. And you still have a big following here.
They love me. I'm there. I just got a call from somebody. I just got a call from somebody the other day. I was doing that show. I did it for a year starting last January, a year ago January.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do both shows as All Marine Radio got bigger and there was more demands. I couldn't do it. I was killing myself. So I stopped doing it. And I just got a call from one of the sponsors last week and said, hey, man, I just wanted to call and thank you. You know how many jobs I got from advertising on your show? I said, no, how many?
Yeah.
Because I love those calls. I'll tell you another funny story. My cousin Tom, who lives up in Sacramento, his son Joe, who I call my nephew, even though, because Tom is the closest thing I have to a brother, but he's not my brother. So Joe's actually not my nephew, but that's what I call him. So Joe just got done playing shortstop for Sacramento City College, and they lost in Game 7 of the California Junior College Championships in Fresno last weekend. So that's pretty big time baseball in California. Junior college baseball is big stuff. Anyway, so he's now playing in a wood bat league for college players up in Minnesota. And
is he?
Yeah, he's playing in Wilmer, Minnesota, South Central Minnesota. And so my cousin Tom said, do you think I'll have a good time? I said, look, man, the Midwest is different. And you'll love it. You'll absolutely love it. The people, small town America is the best. And so it made me think of you, Kim, because Kim he's a flower child, right? A coastal guy and in the food business, and he winds up in North Dakota. Would you have ever thought in your life that you would have made North Dakota your home?
I would have lost a lot of money on that bet. A lot of money. I came here in January 1976, the winter after I got back from working in Europe. And Bob was here fixing up a building that the original Sanders ended up being in. And I pulled into town. I had a brand new 76 Toyota Land Cruiser. And I pulled in, parked under the balcony, and I went upstairs. We partied a little bit. I came out the next day. I couldn't move my shift lever. And and the oil was frozen. And I says, what the hell is going on here? He says, oh, yeah, we'll take it in. The oil will thaw out, and you'll be okay. Don't you have a head bolt heater? I said, what the hell is that? And so I said, he says, we can start a great restaurant here. I said, North Dakota, the sun's out. It's 25 below zero. There are ice crystals in the sky. I don't think so, Bob. And 10 years later, here I am. In 1985, I ended up 9 years there. Ended up here in North Dakota, and that was 33 years ago.
So why?
I love it here.
Why stay?
Yeah.
Why?
I why did I stay? Because of the people. That's why.
Yeah.
They treated me once. I worked. Bob and I were going to get the business going, get Sanders going. In 3 years, we were going to sell it, split the cash, and go our ways. And after 3 years, I said, and everybody treated me great right out of the gate. But once I bought the business from Bob, his half of the business, the people embraced me like I was born here. It was just magnificent. And to end it all, when I sold the restaurant, the alley behind the restaurant, John Bonger and I named the Alley of Love. And so the city proclaimed and put up alley signs that says Kim Holmes Alley of Love. Man, come on. Who gets an alley named after?
Yeah,
I don't want
right.
a battleship. I don't want a building or a highway or a street. An alley? That's cool.
Yeah. No. But you know why they did that? They did that because we used to talk about Kim and I. I used to go. I used to get on the mayor and the city council because she became a bit of a national celebrity, and she's from she lives in and writes in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Her name is Marilyn Haggerty. She's the one that Jimmy Kimmel and who's the other late night Jimmy Fallon have David Letterman had on his show. She wrote like and everybody kind of at first started kind of ridiculing her because she did a restaurant review of the Olive Garden, right?
Yep.
And so big time foodies don't do restaurant reviews of restaurants like the Olive Garden, right? But when you live in the small town Midwest and the Olive Garden opens in your town, it's a big deal.
It is.
It's a big deal. Now everybody else can laugh and say how quaint it is. That's how that thing, it got going because look how ridiculous this is. And then it was like, well, who is this woman and what did she say? And she's got, you know, I don't, Marilyn might be in her 90s now and she has got a
face next week. I just talked to a gal who's going to her 90th birthday party or her 92nd birthday party.
She has a wit that is sharp as a dagger. And I used to get really nervous when I would bring her on because she would kind of slit your throat, like very politely, like a grandma would do, like in front of God and everybody, and make you sound stupid. And you would even like, it would take you a second to realize like, oh my God, she just hammered me. But anyway, she used to write in her column that she wanted a lift station, named after herself. And a lift station is put on a line, when you have to, put some type of propulsion in a line to move it because gravity isn't working. So depending on the lay of your plumbing system in the city, you have lift stations at different places to get, water, over humps and things like that to defy gravity. And so you see these concrete buildings around the town. And so she wrote year after year, you know, maybe someday they'll name a lift station after me. So I started getting on the council on a regular basis. What does this woman have to do? And so ultimately they named the lift station after Marilyn Haggerty on Belmont Road. Belmont Road. They had a ceremony out there. A friend of mine made a sign for it. And And it was named. So there was precedence, and then we would talk about the Alley of Love all the time. So quite naturally, those two concepts should marry up, and Kim would get that named after him. But you know what? And that's what I told my cousin. I told my cousin that no, the people in small town America, it's a different way of life. And if you want to, in my opinion, the disconnect in this country isn't racial. The disconnect is the people that live in small town America view life differently. They provide for themselves. They suck it up. They come back from floods. They come back from fires. They come back and they look to provide for themselves, where I think big city America looks at life different. Right? It's going to be a government. I believe that's the disconnect in terms of how, and so he goes to my nephew's first game in Wilmer. And so they're raising the colors of all the branches of service during the game. Everybody's standing up. So he finds the guy who raises the Marine Corps colors. He's in a red shirt with a Marine Corps Eagle Globe and Anchor, and he gets his phone out and he does this like 30-second interview with him. And he asks him if he's ever heard of All Marine Radio. And the guy says, yeah, I've heard of that. And I said, he's lying. He's never heard. But, you know, he's just this nice guy. And he says, hey, so what do you have to say to my Uncle Mike and everybody on All Marine Radio? And the guy says, Semper Fidelis, Mac. And I said to him, I said, so are you enjoying yourself? He said, it's awesome. He said, the people are so nice. And the other thing I told him is that he works for the Diocese of Sacramento. Tom is the chief financial officer for the Diocese of Sacramento. Yeah. I said, you know, one thing you'll enjoy is there's beautiful churches in the region. And they were all done by immigrants when they moved, a lot of them Catholic, a lot of them Lutheran. But when you drive past the community, the tallest building and the spire that you see, that'll be the church. You should stick your head into a few of them. And so he sent me a picture of one of them the other day, and he goes, wow, Mike, he said, how cool is this? And it's just a beautiful little church, I want to say in like Bagley or Edgeley, Minnesota, something like that, that is still the tallest building in town, and it's in the center of the city, and so it's very cool, very cool stuff. So the
and Marilyn Haggerty was put on the map because Anthony Bourdain, the, you know, has his own TV show on CNN. He stuck up for it and said, and they got to be a pal. She wrote a book, he edited, and then she got all these interviews on all the late night shows. And Marilyn, when she had her lift station dedicated, I wrote her in on the back of my Harley.
That's right.
It was like, and she had a bicycle helmet that had jelly beans on it all over it. It was pretty good.
Yeah, she has a son that writes. She's been in the newspaper business forever. Her husband was in the business. Her son, I don't know if he still does, but he wrote for the Wall Street Journal. But she's you know, really this incredible. You know, you meet these people that are just incredible people. Born, I think she's born and raised in South Dakota. You know, and she gets married and moves to North Dakota. Is in the newspaper business her whole life, and they're just incredibly literate, incredibly well read. And just wonderful people, and she's certainly emblematic of that. But the Midwest, it's and let me tell you, if you're looking,
I'm glad your nephew loves it.
Oh yeah, no, he's so he'll be up there most of the summer playing baseball in that Wood Bat League. So I think my cousin Tom is going to be there for, he and his wife are going to be there for a couple weeks. Traveling around and checking things out. So if you see a guy named Tom McNamara, stop him and say hi. He's a nice guy. He's nicer than me. I said, hey, after 2 weeks of being in Wilmer, you could probably get elected mayor. If I could get elected to the city council, you could be mayor, Tom. Because he's nicer than me. So, yeah, no kidding. But he's a good dude. He's a good dude. The
yeah.
I've got an email for you. Mac, has the chef ever talked about his favorite cooking shows? If not, could he please tell us a couple ones that he likes? You know, we have talked about that before, but we can talk about it certainly again because they do change. What are you watching these days?
Well, pretty religiously, I watch Anthony Bourdain Sunday at 9 o'clock. He has an hour show, and he's a tremendous writer. His first book was called Kitchen Confidential, and that was how he was raised in kitchens when he got out of chef school, and that's pretty much how I was treated. It talks about, you know, the scene in the restaurant business and how it's, you know, you speak a different language and there's a lot of swearing and stuff. But anyway, and then I watch Anthony Zimmer. And he's on Monday and Sunday afternoons, but Monday and Tuesday are in the evening, and starting about 5 o'clock our time. And he's travels all over the world, and he eats everything, but it's fascinating. He's very good. He's from the Bronx. He lives in Minneapolis now. And it's fascinating. And then for kicks, I'll watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with Guy Ferrari, who's from Santa Rosa, California. And, those three shows are kind of what I switch around. But the Food Channel, you know, what's your poison? They've got it all. You know, Iron Chefs, some shows, the chefs are articulate and really know their stuff, and you can understand what the hell they're talking about. But Bourdain and Zimmer, I really like. Those are my three shows that I kind of watch, when I watch food shows. Every once in a while, I'll throw in an Iron Chef. Because I don't know how they do that shit. They're so far ahead of me. And the food scene today is so incredible. The direction they've taken the food scene from when I was a chef. It's amazing. It's fantastic.
What's the biggest change?
The chemistry of it. The molecular gastronomy is the term. And they they'll take a strawberry, they'll freeze it, they turn it into a powder, and then they reconstitute it in a different form, and it tastes even, the strawberry flavor is even more intense. It's just incredible. But you have to have a lot of expensive equipment in the kitchen, and that's not who I was when I was chefing. Though after working in Europe for 5 years, it really broadened my abilities and interests in cooking more than just meat and potatoes. And when I lived in Washington State, in Port Townsend, Washington, I learned how to cook seafood because I got fresh seafood, fresh salmon every day, shrimp, mussels, oysters, clams. And so that took me in the direction of seafood, which I just love.
So the biggest change would be the science behind the food. I don't know that I agree with that.
Well, it's the imagination of the chefs too.
Well, you know what? This is an outsider, but to me, the biggest change in cooking is the proliferation of all these different ideas and techniques that you now see on the Food Channel, and people, it's almost like you've taken it and put it on steroids, and now you have this vibrant cooking community that borrows from each other, that does different things with the, you know, our discussion, a couple weeks ago about the way to configure charcoal, and now something that probably was done by people in their garages and sold locally at a swap meet right now becomes a booming business because of the internet and the way we're all connected. So to me, that has laid the foundation for all these shows and all this thought and all this interaction relative to cooking. That's because I know people that like have all these rubs and all these different things just for grilling. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And you see it manifested itself in business when you walk through, you know, the sauce section of your local store. Walk through the sauce section, walk through the rub section, and it's like, holy smoke, look at all this stuff. You know, so anyway.
Yeah. There are more varieties of stuff than than anything I've ever seen, and it's fascinating. But one show I want anyone out there who likes cooking shows to watch, it just finished up, it's called Master Chef Junior, and it's kids from 8 to 13 cooking. And Gordon Ramsay is the host, and he and two celebrity chefs, they change, are the judges. And they start out with like 24 kids and end up with 3 and then 2. And then there's one chef, and what they have to do is unbelievable. And what they come up with, and it's all because of the Food Network and the interest in food. You know, when I came back from Europe in 75, there weren't any fancy restaurants in little towns. So when I came to Grand Forks, Marilyn Taggarty, after about 3 years, year after I bought Bob out, 4 years, she says, well, now you're the best restaurant in the state. What are you going to do to stay there? And I says, well, it never stops, man. You just keep working at it. You know, you have to stay consistent. You have to, do new stuff. But today, any little town in America, they have these kids that have gone to cooking schools or just gone out and worked for different chefs in restaurants throughout the big cities and have come home and started their own restaurants. And that, to me, is the greatest thing that's happened in the food business in this country. The amount of good restaurants and little hole-in-the-wall towns, and they thrive. It's just magnificent to see.
No, it is, and so anyway, that's my take on it. Is that the internet and cable TV, the exposure, and then people take that stuff and they experiment with them. And again, link it to again. Just close your eyes and think of it. Just go to your local supermarket, and when you're looking for sauce to put on chicken or ribs, right? Think of it. You have the craft section, right? Then you have what? Famous Dave, right?
Yes.
Then you have You have Jack Daniels has a whole series of sauces, and these, so it's like, okay, what are the basic sauces we have to be a supermarket? All right, and it's huge. The selection is huge, so it's amazing. And it used to be it was probably craft. Right, you had a great choice. You had a great choice of craft sauces.
Yeah.
So
and just one barbecue sauce. Craft barbecue sauce. There wasn't any smoky, schmucky, smoky.
Whatever.
It was just craft barbecue sauce. That's what you got. And then maybe Heinz came out. But that was it for years. And now, you know, you'll see somebody who will see a recipe for a sauce and they'll figure it out and then they'll, make up their own that is similar but totally different. And that's the biggest, thing in this country is the imagination of the chefs, you're right, and what they are doing now with food, it's amazing. It should be embraced, and if something gets put down in front of you, don't stick your nose up in the air. Eat it and taste it, and smell it, and look at it, and then decide whether you like it or not. But yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
Hey, I have to ask you a question. Around where I live, there is about a bazillion sushi restaurants.
Yeah.
How, and they go in storefronts all the time. Is it because you only need a grill? And so you can put them in there because, you know, the apparatus that you need to run a restaurant is pretty substantial in terms of cooking and preparing food. How are there so many sushi restaurants that open just in these little strip mall storefronts? Because you don't need a whole lot of infrastructure to do that. What can you explain that to me?
What you do there, you know, there's the sushi restaurants that grill things. Now, across the street from us, there's a little sushi restaurant, that we go to, but you have to have refrigeration, you have to get in fresh fish, and if you're gonna grill things, you have to have a little kind of like a hibachi, and they burn charcoal in there, and you don't need the venom, though some places do, if they have a big spread, but I'm just talking storefronts. And then you have to have a deep fryer, which requires a hood, for doing tempuras and things like that. But, basically, you need refrigeration. You need a counter space where you can roll out your sushi rolls. And you have to, especially where you live, those chefs get fresh fish in probably three, four times a week. So you know, and they don't buy big amounts because they cut the fish so thin. If they're going to do sashimi, that's when you eat it raw. Or sushi rolls with the rice. You don't want big chunks of stuff. It's paper thin. It's the combination of the flavors. Whether, you know, you dip it in some kind of soy or a plum sauce or whatever it is. Wasabi mustard is, of course, that's really horseradish. Wasabi. It's not mustard. It's horseradish. And sometimes you have to be careful when you eat wasabi, because if it's fresh, you'd be breathing fire out of your nose if you eat too much of it. You can't drink enough water. But, they don't need a lot to work with. And usually those restaurants are run by, maximum 2-3 people. Your main sushi chef. And,
so the bottom line is you just don't need a lot of space, and that's why you see, you see them all over the place. You see them all over the place. Wow. All right.
Yep.
Mac.
And you, they're pretty affordable. Go ahead.
Right. Question. Did Kim make bread at his restaurant? If so, did he make any kind of garlic bread, or could he give me a recipe for making garlic bread? I like it with Italian food. I like it with grilled dishes, fish, and steak during the summer. I've seen a number of recipes. Be curious what he would serve in terms of a quote-unquote traditional broiler-fed French bread. So that's what I grew up with, Kathleen, making French bread.
Yep.
In the oven. What, you have a recipe, Kim?
Yes. You take a you get a sheet pan.
Right.
And you can this fits in your oven. You turn the boiler. You preheat your oven. 300 degrees, but then you turn your broiler on, and you take a mixture of butter, garlic, and then you spread that, and you have to either mince or dice real fine, the garlic, okay. And you mix it in with the butter, and then you spread that on the French bread. And then I put Parmesan cheese on top of that. And then you stick it under the broiler, not directly, 6-8 inches from the broiler, and that butter. And if you don't eat butter, you can do the same thing with olive oil and garlic. And if you, I like lots of garlic on my garlic bread. That's just the way I roll.
Well, as always, your universal advice is season to taste, right? So it's those elements, butter, garlic,
yeah.
Olive oil, garlic, and whatever else you want to put in there. Yeah, season to taste.
I grate Parmesan cheese and put it on the top. Some people will put, a soft cheese on top, mozzarella or something like that, but I like the little crust that forms with Parmesan cheese.
I would tell you that my mom was huge on that, but I've been even improved on my mom's recipe. And I'll give you a couple of coordinating instructions. One, when you put the butter on, coat the bread, including the crust, because if you don't coat it, it will burn before the rest of the concoction bronzes. So you'll have this kind of burnt edge on your French bread. Make sure you get the edge and use a lot of it, because that's what makes it taste good. And then the other thing is, pay attention. Don't walk away from it.
Yeah.
Because it's fragile. No. That, right? You're using that broiler, you got it cranked up. All you're looking for is a little bit of bronze, and you pull that out of there. And you want medium done French bread. You don't want it too bronze brown. You want it just a nice golden, and get it out of there, and then it tastes delicious. But you got to pay attention. And so you got to be parked in front of the broiler when you do that. Otherwise, you serve it and it's brown and it's burned a little bit and it's not as good. So, but I would tell you, I'm a huge fan of that. The other thing is, what kind of bread do you like to use, Kim? Because with baguettes, there's all kinds of choices. And again, in local supermarkets that there never used to be in terms of gourmet breads and things like that. What's your favorite to use?
Well, quite frankly, I like the long French loaf, and all grocery stores have a version of that. Some crusts aren't as hard as the French bread I buy. I buy my French bread at Panera's. Now,
Panera's.
And I get the long French loaf. And then I split it in half lengthwise.
Right.
But when I had the restaurant, I used to make my own French bread every day. at Sanders. I'd start early in the morning. And
Wait a minute. Who made it?
Before I met Beth, okay. I made it.
After you made it? I'm just trying to help you out, okay? Because if she's listening and she hears that you made the French bread, you might get clocked inside of the head. After you met Beth, who made the bread?
We've been married 28 years. I would say 5 years afterwards when we moved from the original Sanders after the flood.
Yes.
So, she helped me with the French bread, and then the last 5 years she did it all herself.
Okay. All right. There you have it.
And that's the way it is.
That's the truth.
She made great French bread. We used the same recipe, yeast, salt, water, and flour.
I'll tell you what, I'm a fan of the baguette because it's got more holes in it. I like the crust,
yes. The
crust that you get the crust is a little firmer. And it's got more holes in it, and guess what pools in it in those holes? That's right.
Butter and garlic, baby.
Butter and garlic, baby. That's right. And when you have a nice, I don't care if it's steak or fish and salad, and it's a nice summer meal, and you got a piece of juicy garlic bread with butter in it in those little pools in the baguette. Come on, man. Dude, that's good eating. Okay, that is good eating. Not gonna lie to you. Not gonna lie to you. Here's another email. Mac, one of the things that I saw on one of the cooking shows that said was a way to enhance the meal is serving something that cleanses the palate. Now, I know I always associated that with high-end dining French style, but the show indicated that it's applicable to eating anything if you're serving good food. So when you transition in terms of white trash dining, when you transition from chips and dips, guacamole, shrimp to your main course, there ought to be something that cleanses the palate. Does Kim have a common man's palate cleanser that he would recommend at the end of hors d'oeuvres before the entree comes that would do that? Kind of an interesting question. This is kind of an example of the collision of high-end dining with mainstream dining and the functions that happen in high-end dining being brought to mainstream dining in some very, very common man form. So kind of interesting. What a common man palate cleaner.
Absolutely. This is what you do. Before the main course, you take a little break, you clear the table of anything that came before it, and even if you're, say, maybe just having a salad, a mixed salad with stuff in it, maybe shrimp salad with lettuce and dressing, or a Caesar salad, then you bring out a sorbet. And that is the traditional, because sorbet isn't like an ice. And you can get any sorbet in the grocery store. You can get a mango sorbet, a raspberry, a lemon, a blueberry sorbet. And you just put one little ice cream scoop, one of those ice cream scoops, about 4 ounces. You scoop it and you put it in a little dish. The fancy joints put it, on a small plate, but I like a little ice cream, cup that, they're easy. Or you can put it in a coffee cup or one of those little soup cups, and you just put a scoop in there. Because it's so good, and I like to make sure I get all of it. That stuff that melts, I tip it to one side and then kind of slurp it up, but that's because that's the heathen I am. But yeah, it's a sorbet. You can get them in any grocery store, and you pick out your favorite flavor, and that's what cleanses your palate between meals. Between courses.
Well, there you have it. And fine dining comes to Broadway, comes to Main Street. Here's another email. Mac, does the chef have a favorite vegetable that he grills? Standard fare, I think, for most of us is asparagus, some broccoli. Is there anything that he says that he likes more, chef?
The only thing that comes close to asparagus is cauliflower. I love cauliflower. My wife, not so much. So I'll buy a small head and I will cut it in half and oil it up all over, and I would put the cut half, flat half, directly on the grill, get your grill marks, and then flip it over on the rounded side, and you have to pay attention. This is also something you don't walk away from. And if you're using indirect heat, after you get your grill marks, you can flip it on its round side and sit it off an indirect heat and let it go for 5-10 minutes to finish cooking through. But that's what I like. And then you can take that out, and then you can cut it up for people or break off the flowerettes in the cauliflower head. And if you want to pour a little butter over it or whatever you want to do. Yeah.
All right.
But
yeah, cauliflower is a little tough, you know, but the trick is in how you cook it, obviously. But it is,
yeah.
It is certainly a little bit, not as many people are fans of it. I grew up eating it and have experienced it you know, in salads it's very tough, but the way my mom used to cook it and as many things as we used to eat it with, you know, it can be, if you steam it appropriately, it can be very, very delicious. So to me, very much like broccoli, although it is a little tougher, but once you steam it and prepare it right, it's just as tender as broccoli is. So, I mean, to me, almost 6-1, half a dozen of the other.
And you can steam it halfway till it's kind of al dente. You cut it first. You put the round side down in the steamer and the flat sides up. You steam it and you par cook it. And then, to guarantee it, then you take it off. You oil up the flat side and pepper it and salt it and then slap that on the grill. So you only have to put grill marks and get your smoky flavor in there. And, you know, you can use anything from a tartar sauce with it, or butter and lemon juice, or just straight lemon juice. It's your call. It's what you like. That's what you want to eat.
There you go, baby. Here's another question. Mac, as long as we're talking about the chef's favorites, I've got three questions for him. One, his favorite cut of fish to grill. Two, his favorite, and I think he talked about this last week, his favorite cut of beef to grill. And three, his favorite roast to grill in terms of cut. So there's three questions for you, chef. Favorite fish to grill. All these are on the grill.
Well, as long as we're on the grill. Probably tuna, and then
really?
Halibut.
No, only one. Only one. Your favorite. Your favorite cut to grill.
Tuna.
Why?
Because I like to have the grill cranked up so it's smoking hot. You have about at least the tuna filet has to be 1 to 1.5 inches thick. It's thick. And you oil it, you salt and pepper it all over, sides, top, bottom. You throw it on the grill. You get score marks. It takes like maybe a minute because you want to serve. I eat that medium rare. So I want to sear the outside so it's char, which takes a minute. And this is another thing I've always preached. Let your fish come to room temperature. Let it sit on the counter before you cook it, half an hour at least. It's not going to spoil. You don't sit it out in the sun.
Right.
But, and when it's at room temperature, that's, and you can oil it before that while it's sitting on the plate. And then you turn it over. You only flip it once. Just like your burgers. You only flip it once.
Right.
And then you sear the other side. You cut it. You can serve it whole to the guest, or you can slice it at an angle, and you serve it with a lemon wedge, or
okay. All right. I don't want to go into full depth. What's your favorite? And then, so your favorite cut of beef to grill is what?
I think my favorite cut of beef to grill is the filet mignon. Because that, again, it's got to be at least 2 inches thick, if not 2.5 inches thick. And I eat my meat rare to medium rare. And I do the cross.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know. So we know how to do it. We sear, and then we go to indirect heat, and you use your digital meat thermometer to get that thing to come out perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, what about your favorite roast?
My favorite roast is a ribeye standing roast. That is called prime rib. And that is something that that's it. A prime rib. And the only, you don't need a full 12 to 15 pound prime rib. You can have your butcher cut off, 4 inch. It depends how many people you're feeding. And if you want roast beef sandwiches for the next couple of days. Which I do. So I would take about a 6 pound roast if I'm having guests. Otherwise, if it's just my wife and I, I'll take a 4 pound cut of prime rib. And,
okay, I can't go into the whole recipe with you. All right. I know you keep wanting to do that with every cut, but
I'm sorry. I'm with you. Just get me started.
I know.
You get me all hot and bothered.
I know. That's why I'm here, to keep this thing on the rails. All right, sir. Yeah. First of all, thank you very much. First day of June. Happy June. I don't know. Happy June 1st. Any big plans for any big plans for the summer weekend?
Oh, not really. I think we're going to stick around. It's going to be rainy on and off. I don't know whether we'll see a movie. We haven't for a while. I don't even know what's out. We're going to just do some salads this weekend, cook some chicken.
Hang out.
Sunday, and hang out.
Right.
And watch sports. I can't get enough of sports. Because there's nothing else on TV.
Let me just tell you, one of the colossal mistakes ever made, mental mistakes, I don't mean missing a ball or dropping one or something like that, got made in the NBA Finals last night.
I saw that.
J.R. Smith didn't know the score. The score is tied. They could actually go ahead and win it, I think, with 4 seconds left. The guy shooting a free throw misses it. J.R. Smith gets it. He thinks they're ahead, and he takes off running for open pasture, And then LeBron James is screaming at him. He passes the ball with like a second. The guy turns and shoots, and they miss. And then they get blown out in overtime. To me, it looked like they missed shots. It looked like they didn't recover mentally from that mistake. But yikes! And then the Stanley Cup playoff is going on, and Las Vegas and Washington are playing, and they are absolutely positively getting after each other. It's awesome to watch.
It is great.
Yeah.
Absolutely great.
Yeah, they're on tonight. All right, sir. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Good. Thank you, and happy anniversary for your show.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for being part of it. There you have it. The All Marine Radio head chef. It's going to be on his tombstone. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.